Good morning, friends. We're so thankful that you are here with us at the Hilltop Church this morning. And those who are regular members here know that we're having a special Amazing Facts Summit weekend now, dealing with Revelation's final warning, talking about the three angel messages that go to the world immediately prior to Jesus coming. I want to also welcome any that are visiting. We've met people already from other states that have flown in for this event, and we always remember that we have the lion's share of the people worshiping with us and studying with us now are on television, watching on AFTV, on the Good News Channel, Facebook, YouTube, and it's not too late right now to send a little note to your friends and say, you'll want to tune in for the remainder of this series if you have not heard the first few presentations. They have been outstanding. My name is Doug Batchelor. I'm blessed to be the senior pastor. Now they call them lead pastors. I like that name better. Senior starts to bother me as the years go by. But of the church here, and I'm looking forward to sharing with you the subject this morning, dealing with worship him that made. Now, this is based upon the first angel's message you find in Revelation chapter 14, and we're going to put that up on the screen, and we'll be looking at that together. It says, "And then I saw another angel flying in the midst of heaven." This is Revelation chapter 14, verse 6. "Then I saw another angel flying in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach to those who dwell on the earth, to every nation, tribe, tongue, and people, saying with a loud voice," that's a megaphone, it actually means a megaphono, "fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment has come, and worship him who made heaven and earth, the sea, and the springs of water." Many times in the Bible, it makes it very clear that the God of the Bible is the creator. He is the one who made. In fact, part of this message, worship God who made the heavens and the earth and the sea, that's an excerpt directly from the fourth commandment. It says, we worship him, and he's picked a special day to worship him on the seventh day. And it says, for in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth and the sea. But that's not going to be the specific focus of my message this morning. I think many of us understand the Sabbath truth. I'm going to be talking about he is the one who made. Because right now, we're living in a world that is very different from 200 years ago, where the vast majority of people believed that God created. That belief is under attack. And now approximately 50% of the people in North America, and it varies from country to country around the world, no longer believe that God is the creator. They believe that things have slowly evolved. And that's a very dangerous belief because it affects whether or not you can worship him appropriately. So we need to start at the beginning. We have a starting point here. You know, one of the keys to happiness is you need to know something about past, present, and future. You must know where you came from, what you are doing here, and where you are going in order for you to be secure and be happy. And this just forms your whole life view. I remember hearing about a boy that came into the living room. His mother was sitting on the couch and reading. He had a very troubled look on his face, and she said, "What's going on?" He said, "Mom, is it true in the Bible that God made man from the dust?" "Well, yes." "And Mom, is it true that when you die, you turn back into dust?" She said, "Yes." He said, "I'm almost sure there's someone under my bed, and I don't know if they're coming or going." You need to know where you came from and where you're going. So I would submit to you this morning that unless you understand that God divinely created, you cannot worship him the way he needs to be worshiped. That's why this truth will shape your whole worldview. If you believe that everything happened over millions of years, first of all, you can't believe the Bible. Because Jesus makes it very clear that if you don't believe Moses, Moses' account of creation in Genesis, literal 6 day, 7 day, including the Sabbath, of creation, he said, you don't believe Moses, you cannot believe me. And there's so many references in the Bible to God literally creating the heavens and the earth and doing it in that very rapid time span that you just have to start picking the Bible apart, and pretty soon it stops being the inspired Word of God in your life. So that's why this is such a critical subject to understand. Now, I'm coming to you with this with a lot of personal passion because I grew up, went to 14 different schools before I even went to college. And virtually all of the schools taught evolution. I believed it because that's what I was told. I should also mention one of the bad side effects of the teaching of evolution is the rate of teenage suicide has gone up exponentially from 2.5 teenagers per 100,000 back in the 1950s to now about 18, a five-fold increase in teenage suicide when we started telling young people there's really no purpose for life, that you've just evolved from lower forms of life, and they figure they die, they turn back into fertilizer. It changes everything about your worldview. So once I learned the truth on this, I really began to study, because for me, it just didn't make sense how you could get organization and design from nothing. I'd like to submit to you from my own personal study, for my own benefit and understanding, not only is it theology that teaches creation, I believe that geology, biology, archaeology all support creation. And so I'm going to go through just, and again, we're doing a flyover here. I don't have time to go in deep because this is a deep study that you could spend weeks on. I'll be going over what some of the points are, covering about 10 points of why I believe that God created and that He deserves our worship as our Creator. First of all, there's something called the law of the conservation of mass. This is a scientific law. And in that law, it basically says matter cannot be created or destroyed. For the universe to come from nothing requires faith. The idea that everything that we see suddenly came out of nowhere for no reason. Can you imagine that, friends? That one day, everything came from nothing out of nowhere for no reason. This is the teaching of evolution. Now, I don't know about you, but that to me sounds like it takes faith. There is nothing that we observe in the science world that would support that. You say, well, once there was nothing, and that nothing was nowhere. Because if you've got the vacuum of eternal nothingness, then how do you know where you are? You can't say I'm near the cactus or the rock, because there are no cactus and no rocks. And so out of the nothingness nowhere, with no cause, you need some cause to cause a big bang. That nothing, nowhere, for no cause, suddenly exploded and developed into all the incredible systems and structure and organization and design and inner working relationships. You really think about that, and that is very preposterous. But as time goes by, even the scientists are second-guessing the theory of evolution. Number two, not only the law of conservation of mass, you've got the law of entropy. And the second law of thermodynamics says that nature tends from order to disorder in isolated systems. You know, if you stack three rocks or four rocks on top of each other on a hill to mark a trail, if time goes by, they tumble. If you have a beautifully manicured garden with everything, all the rows nice and clean and neat, and the vines are trained, leave it alone for 3 years, and what happens? Things tend towards chaos, and they disintegrate, and they lose their energy, and they break down. But what we see is we see a universe where there is order and design, that intelligence and energy has been invested in all these different systems. Something from the outside created these things. So you've got the law of entropy. Then you've got the law of biogenesis. The law of biogenesis basically says that all existing life came from life. You know the old adage, which came first, the chicken or the egg? He said, well, the egg, well, you need a chicken to lay an egg. So, well, the chicken came first. That chicken had to come out of an egg. All life comes from existing life. Now, friends, I don't know if you've thought about this, but it doesn't matter how many textbooks you write. It doesn't matter how many universities you've found that say that we've got scientific proof. There's not a single example anywhere in the world in the history of man where we have observed life springing from non-life. Even though if you say, well, that plant came from the seed is life. And that in itself is a miracle. They've got seeds that they've pulled out of pyramids. They've sprouted. How do they contain that essence? But those date seeds that they got from the ruins of Masada 2,000 years old, you know what? They grew a date tree. And that date seed needed another date tree to create the seed. And it keeps on going back that way. So the law of biogenesis makes it pretty clear. And when you think about it, in order for there to be life and these cells of life, each one of these individual cells are extremely complex. You see, back in the days of Louis Pasteur and some of the early people who developed evolution, when they would look through a microscope and they would look at a cell, they saw a very simple object that seemed to have three components. You have the cell wall, and you have this like plasma, and then you have the nucleus. And so when you told them that life could develop spontaneous, they called it spontaneous generation. They actually believed that life could spontaneously just start. And Louis Pasteur disproved that. One reason they believed it is they noticed if they left some meat laying out for a few days, that pretty soon maggots would develop. And they said these maggots just developed out of nothingness. Well, Louis Pasteur said, you put that meat in a vacuum and prevent flies from laying eggs on it, you're not going to see life. Now, when we look through a microscope at a single cell of life, it is infinitely more complex than anyone could have imagined. I've got a few quotes here from some scientists that talk about that. Dr. Stephen Bloom said, a single human cell, like a skin cell or a liver cell, is far more complex than the space shuttle or a nuclear submarine. One scientist said, one single cell of life is more complex than New York City with all of its inner working systems at rush hour. All of the systems and the machines and things and the chemical reactions, and they're all communicating and they're doing cleansing and they're processing gases and they're sending out signals to the other cells. It is mind-boggling now. And that's why there's a crisis among a lot of evolutionists, because they realize while they defend evolution, they say there must have been some higher intelligence, because you know what they do? They've made a religion out of it. And you can watch, you know, the History Channel or Discovery and some of them, and you see these beautiful nature programs. And I love the photography, I'll just admit. And you'll hear the narrator say, isn't it wonderful, the genius of evolution that helped these creatures develop these attributes and features, and how, isn't it wonderful, the brilliance of Mother Nature, how smart she is. And I'm going, why are you saying evolution is a genius? Why are you saying Mother Nature is a genius? Why didn't you say God can't do that? Let me tell you what's at the foundation of the religion of evolution. Is we really only have two choices. Either there is a higher power that designed and made everything that is beyond our comprehension, or everything happened accidentally for no reason, with no purpose, which is also beyond our comprehension. But if you believe that there's a higher power, that means that there may be a reason for your life, and there may be an accountability for your life. There may be moral guidelines, and so many people can't afford to believe in God because they don't want to submit their lives to those values. So they spend their lives fighting that fact and trying to create some other scheme, some other scenario to explain the existence of everything. Hence, evolution. But the more I studied it and looked at it, I thought, how in the world did I ever believe that? Well, that's what I was told over and over again. Who is it? Lenin that said, repeat a lie often enough and people will think it's truth. Life is so complex. You know, the world's most powerful supercomputer right now is in Japan. It's called the Fugaku. It's made by Fujitsu. They developed the name somehow honoring Mount Fuji. This computer, it's beat out the computer in China. It's beat out the IBM's computer, the Summit computer. This is as of December 2021. It broke all the records. It smashed the records. This computer can conduct more than 442 quadrillion calculations per second. It has 158,976 nodals and processors, and that's a picture of it there on the screen, that fit into 432 of these tower racks, 432 of them, using 26,000 kilowatts to power it. And do you know that that computer still has not reached the level of the artificial intelligence that can match the brain of a mouse? Do you know they spent approximately $1 billion building this computer, and they cannot replicate the intelligence of a mouse? And yet there are intelligent people that think that a mouse brain happened by accident. Can you see why I struggle with that? Let me see. I've got a little illustration here. I hope this goes okay. Alas, from the foliage, I have discovered something. So this used to be a pen. And it fell from my desk several times and developed aerodynamic design. I'll make sure I get the control in the right hand here. Now, you did fill out an insurance form before the service today? Here, little birdie. And that all began with a pen falling off my desk. And it broke, and half of it turned into the remote control, and the other half turned into this engineering wonder. Do you know how they designed this little bird? They looked at how a real bird flies. And they studied the wing flaps of a real bird to do this. Do you know how they design submarines? They look at porpoises and dolphins and how they break through the water. Do you know how they design jet fighters? They look at the body of a swift, fastest bird next to a peregrine falcon. And to think that here we obviously, if I told you that this thing just showed up in my desk one day, you'd never believe that. But to think that we can support that in the other areas of life, how in the world can we have them teach that to our children? That you came from nothing once, a long time ago, out of nowhere for no purpose. This is the teaching of evolution, and it makes it very difficult to worship Him that made when we're surrounded with this religion. And what concerns me is you hear something often enough, even Christians, I hear them muttering, yeah, millions of years ago. Well, let's go on here with our presentation. Not only do we have the complexity of life, there are so many symbiotic relationships in life that things could not evolve at the same time without depending on another creature, a plant, an insect, an animal. You know that there are many flowers that will not pollinate without bees or butterflies. And you think, how did that flower manage to survive billions of years without the insects? Or how did the insects that feed on the flowers survive without the flowers, but yet they cannot exist without one another? There's a beautiful hummingbird. It's called the swordbill hummingbird. It's got the longest bird bill of any creature compared to its body size. You wonder how the little thing can fly. But it's got that long nose, and it just is designed perfectly to fit into a particular flower, and the flower needs the bird to pollinate the flower, and the bird needs the flower to get the nectar, and evolutionists cannot come up with a scenario where they would both evolve simultaneously to need to exist with one another. So you have all these symbiotic relationships. Oh, there's another neat one. You've got these. In the ocean, there's these goby fish. They've got good eyesight, but they're not very strong. But they pair up with a shrimp. And the shrimp has got strength, but it's virtually blind. And all through the day, the shrimp is touching the fish to see where the fish is. And the fish, but he can sense when the fish says there's a problem, they both go in the hole together, and the shrimp protects the fish. And when did they sign a contract to work things out that way? There's a tarantula that is friends with the frog. They travel together. Tarantula could easily kill and eat the frog, but it'll eat everything else, but it won't eat that frog. And the frog doesn't bother, he's not afraid of the tarantula in several countries. And I could just go through all of these different symbiotic relationships through nature and how these things could develop and evolve so that they depend on each other is incomprehensible. Then you've got the flood of evidence that you would see in geology. All around the world, there's evidence for a great flood, according to the Bible. You know, and even in the histories of the world, you can go to several different countries. And for instance, the Hawaiians had a story about a man named Noe who survived a great flood in a canoe with his family and some animals. And the Mesopotamians had a story called the Epic of Gilgamesh. And in China, I just read recently that there's a group of scientists in China that are saying the legends that they've heard about a great flood in China that covered the whole land, they thought were myth. The geology is saying it really did happen. And as you look around the world, and you can see that there was some catastrophe. You look at the fossil beds. I think we've got one that is going to go up on the screen here for you in just a moment. You can see from the evidence of these fossils where millions of animals died suddenly and were buried. You realize to make a fossil, if an animal dies and it just lays on the ground, it gets picked apart and eaten by scavengers and birds of carrion, and it decomposes. In order to have the fossils that they have, they need to die and then be buried very quickly by sediment or by ash, and that requires a catastrophe. And all over the world, you can see in the geologic record and through the fossils evidence that there was a massive catastrophe where animals were covered with volcanic ash or floods. And I remember for years when I was going to school, they'd say, yeah, all the dinosaurs seemed to die out. They got a disease back in my day. Some disease wiped them out. And then as time went by, they said, well, no, it seems that the fossil... I said, you know, what about a flood? And they said, no, not Noah's flood. But as time went by, the evidence could not be refuted that they were covered in some massive flood catastrophe. So then it became an asteroid. An asteroid struck the Earth, and it caused tsunamis. And if it wasn't an asteroid, because they say for an asteroid to wipe out all the dinosaurs, how come the big dinosaurs all died, but the little squirrel mammals lived? And then they said, well, it may have been a volcano or an earthquake that caused a tsunami. But the evidence around the world is all of these creatures were covered very rapidly with sediment and preserved. Well, but what about, Pastor Doug, they're found at different layers? Here's an interesting fact. If you ask an evolutionist, how do you date the layers in this geologic column? They say, well, it's based on the fossils that we find in those layers. Okay, well, how do you date the fossils? Based on the layer where we find them. Did you catch that? That's called circular reasoning. That doesn't make any sense. And why are some of the creatures at different levels? Well, a fact of biology is that when different creatures drown, different species have different oxygen density, and different creatures will bloat and float, I know that's not pleasant to think about, and sink at different times based on what kind of, you know, a reptile will sink sooner maybe than a mammal, for example, especially amphibians, and you're going to find them at different levels. And so there have been so many assumptions that have been made that just really haven't been thought through. Well, got to make sure I don't get too far ahead of myself. Next, you've got what they call living fossils. Now, this to me is another slam dunk. A living fossil, what is that? Well, that's talking about a creature that they at one time thought was dead. They thought that it was extinct. And in some cases, they thought it was extinct for 60 million years or more. And then lo and behold, they find one alive. Now, Exhibit A is a fish. You see him on the screen here. He's called a coelacanth. And when they saw fossils of the coelacanth, they said, here you have an example of a missing link. This is a fish that was developing proto-legs. See the little stubby fins? They said that's because he was slowly developing legs. He would crawl across the bottom and eventually crawl up on land, and those fins would turn into full legs. And they had this as a missing link that had been extinct for 60 million years. But then they were fishing off of the east coast of Africa, and lo and behold, they pulled up a living coelacanth. And they've, you know, caught many others since then. They live very deep. They find out they're still very much alive. Now, here's the question. Think about this. The supposition of evolution is that creatures are always going through dynamic changes, trying to improve themselves, and through survival of the fittest and natural selection, they're somehow striving for the mastery and for success and to grow and to improve. And so, you know, as time goes by, the pencil continues to fall to the ground. It develops aerodynamic wings, and it's always trying to get better so it doesn't hurt so much when it hits the ground. Why is the coelacanth still crawling on those stubby legs after 60 million years? Why are the fossils identical? Another example of a living fossil is a horseshoe crab. Now, you don't have them here in California, but I remember back on the East Coast, we'd see them on the beach, and it is the creepiest creature in the world. Especially when they flip over and they got all their legs going like this and they're upside down in the water. But there you have a picture of a modern horseshoe crab. Now listen carefully. The one on the left is a fossil 500, nearly half a billion years old. 450, they're estimating, million years old. They haven't changed. The poor thing, they've got very primitive eyes. Why haven't its eyes gotten any better? If evolution is true, you'd think it would be uniform across the board, that everything would be transitioning to get better. These guys got passed up. It's just not fair. In fact, the horseshoe crabs now are smaller than some of the fossils. Another example in this is, have you heard of the megalodon? When I grew up in New York City, I lived across the street from the Museum of Natural History, one of the most famous museums, if not the most famous in the world, maybe next to the Louvre, but as far as natural history museums. And my brother and I, you could go free. It was across the street, 81st Street, New York City. I used to walk across the street all the time and roam through that entire museum. And you heard about the movie they made called Night at the Museum. I was the kid that almost got locked into the museum at night because I love roaming around the museum, and sometimes they'd be locking the place up and I'd still be looking. I wanted to be a paleontologist. I'd see these great big statues of the Stegosaurus and the Brontosaurus and the Tyrannosaurus Rex, and I was so fascinated by that. Friends, I was in deep with evolution. But I remember right across the street, they had the jaw of a megalodon, this huge shark mouth. And that a person, you could drive a Volkswagen through it. Now they're making all these movies about these massive sharks. Do you realize sharks have remained basically unchanged according to evolution for 150 million years? They say they're very successful. They got to this point of success and they just stopped. Well, wouldn't they want to get out of the water and crawl around? Evolutionists say that These creatures, like seals, managed to grow legs. They got out of the ocean and they crawled around on land and they were more like cows, and then they decided to go back in the water and they turned into whales. Honest. How many of you have heard this? Whales used to once be land creatures. They come up with that because they look at the bones and they fit, since they're breathing air, they must have been land creatures and gone back to the sea. Well, they did all that in the time a shark never got out of the water. That doesn't make any sense. If evolution is going to be true, it's going to happen across the board. You get all these living fossils. We have a few sitting here today. Now, while I'm talking about evolution, I need to be fair and listen carefully. I do believe in what you would call microevolution. And this is what has confused so many people. What Darwin observed was really microevolution. That is changes over time within a species that stays the same species. Like I said, you've got, well, here, let me just show you what's on the screen there. This is a National Geographic magazine from January 2002. I took a picture of that because it says, from wolf to woof, as they study the DNA of dogs, they realize that all the dogs in the world, and look at the great variety of dogs, you see, that poor little chihuahua is no bigger than that can. And I think it's full grown. That all the different, and think about all the different dog varieties that have developed in the last 200 years. I can't even say some of their names, not in church. And they're, you know, they got the, some of them are all naked, they got no hair, some of them are just a ball of hair, some of them have all this saggy skin, some of them are like racers, and they're all bred with these different traits. And by the way, they found as they continue to breed them and breed them and breed them, instead of becoming more sophisticated, they become more prone to genetic problems. But they say they can trace the DNA of every dog in the world back to two original wolf-like dogs. How many did Noah need on the ark? Only two. They're unclean animals. Only two. I thought that was interesting that National Geographic would say that. In the next slide, you can see, look at the great diversity you'll find of dogs. And another example of microevolution might be, you've got like the Arctic hare. The Arctic hare, it's a rabbit. Rabbits and hares are related. And then you got desert hares, and the desert hares are brown, and they are both hares. But the Arctic hare, in the winter, it has, that's a picture of one that's shedding, he's going from his winter coat to his summer coat. Somehow, through living in this snow environment during the ice age, they began to adapt to their climate. Has that happened with humans around the world as well? You will see examples of microevolution. God did something amazing within our DNA, where when you, in your life, experience certain things, you transfer those experiences, it actually affects your DNA. You can then transfer from you to your offspring some of those traits. An example, I just got done reading a book about some mountain climbers that go to Everest, and they always use these Tibetan Sherpas because they live above 14,000 feet consistently. Their bodies, these Tibetans, are much better at processing oxygen because for generations, their ancestors have lived at these high elevations. They pass that ability on to their offspring. How does that happen? Through living, there's a little microevolution that happens, and they're able to better process oxygen because they've somehow transferred that advantage. But you know what? They stay humans. And all the dogs with all the changes and the different varieties of dogs, they are still dogs. And yes, you can breed a Chihuahua with a Great Dane. I don't know what your mind going there right now during church, but I'm just letting you know that they're all dogs, and you'll get dogs out of that. So yes, there is something called microevolution, but what you do not have is an alligator turning into a bird. There are no, and doesn't the Bible say God made each one after their kind? There is not a single case in known history of macroevolution, where one species turns into another species. You can get doctors that will write all kinds of papers, but anyone can make anything up, but they haven't observed this happening. And yet evolution is not based on microevolution, it's based on macroevolution. That, you know, you've got the squirrels turning into horses, and they're just totally different species. So then you've got the missing links. Not only have we not observed the changing from species, the transitional forms are missing. Even Darwin admitted, he said, you know, if evolution has happened from one kind into another kind, he says there's a terrible vacuum of these intermediary types. We call them the missing links. You'll find hundreds of examples of different species of dinosaur around the world, but you don't find the transitional forms from a dinosaur to an alligator and an alligator to a bird. And you know, they say dinosaurs are bird-like. And I just got done reading another book about some explorers that went to the South Pole to study penguins because they saw the penguins had what looked like scales on their feet, and they wondered if these penguins could somehow be the missing link where those scales are similar to reptile scales. And they went through this expedition and several people died, and they came to the conclusion, these are evolutionists, at the end, that there was no link between the scales on a penguin's feet and reptiles. They're just missing. And, you know, the leakies go to Africa and they find a piece of a skull. They find just a little piece of a skull. And they construct a whole skull out of that, and they say, this is the missing link. Well, they take a lot of creative license when they give that little piece of a skull to a sculptor, and they tell the sculptor, this is what we want it to look like. And so what they do is they take the fragments of a monkey or a gorilla, and they try to reshape it and say, this is evolving into man. There are very, very few even cases of this. They can find fossils of apes and monkeys and humans all over the place, but they don't find the transitions. And you know, it's so important for you to understand what the Bible says. We are made in the image of God. In the London Zoo a few years ago, and matter of fact, they did it recently also, with all their different exhibits, they created another exhibit. They put it right next to their primate exhibit. And in this exhibit, they put several men and women wearing fig leaves. And the students from the schools would go and they look at the primates, and then they go and look at the Homo sapiens. And these actors or models, whoever they were, they'd walk around in this caged area. And they said, we just want people to understand that humans are not any more special than the other animals at the zoo. So they put humans in cages next to the other animals, and they say they're just another animal. Now, if you continue to tell people that, and you tell young people that, how are they going to feel about the importance of their life? You're just a highly evolved monkey. Now, you might think, well, Pastor Doug, oh, by the way, I know they find paintings inside caves, and they find evidence of cavemen out there in different parts of the world. And do you realize that there are still cavemen living in the world today? I lived in a cave. And so the same time that the pyramids were being built, at that same time in history, there are other parts of the world, people said, hey, let's build a cave. I was living in a cave. And so because some people lived in a cave doesn't mean they had no intelligence. And even today, I've been to all different parts of the world, there are some people that live in much more sophisticated environments than others. Some live a very primitive existence, and some live a very sophisticated existence. That's always been the case. So just because they say, well, we found bones in a cave, that doesn't mean that these people that lived there were not intelligent humans. Something else, I'm just sharing the thoughts that I had to process for me to have absolute confidence and peace that we were divinely created in 6 literal days. If humans are now kind of ruling the world, I mean, we're saying that you and I are going to fix the world. We're going to make laws, and we're going to save the world. If humans are ruling the world, then why is it that a gazelle can get up and run 10 minutes after it's born, and we can't even roll over 10 weeks after we're born? Why is it that if we're so highly evolved, we got to kill other creatures and use their fur to cover ourselves up, or we'd freeze to death? Why is it if we've evolved, why is it that we have evolved 90% more brain than we use in our lifetime? Explain that. Why would you evolve? Some use more, some use less. But approximately, we don't use a fraction of our brains because we were meant to live eternity with God. Well, why are there similarities among the various species? It seems like, you know, as you go from place to place in the world, they say, well, you know, squirrels can be a little bit like monkeys. They can be a little bit like men. They can have fingers, and they can have eyes, and their faces are facing front. And you can look at all these characteristics, and they say, well, they're similar. One must have evolved from the other. That's not clear reasoning. If you go out here onto Interstate 80 and just watch, you're going to see all kinds of vehicles go screaming and rip-snorting by. You'll see 18-wheelers, and you'll see motorcycles, you'll see pickups, you'll see sports cars, you'll see battery-driven cars, you'll see all different kinds of vehicles. And they are all coming from different factories that were made uniquely by different designers. But they will all have many things in common. Most of them will have rubber tires. They're going to have an electrical system. Some of them will have an internal combustion system. Some are running on batteries. They'll have windshield wipers. They're going to have lights. Why? Because they are operating in the same environment, so they need certain things in common. Did you hear me? The reason there are creatures in the world that have similarities is because we live in the same environment. We're going to need wings or tails to swim with, or feet to walk with, or hooves or something to move. We're going to need fingers or claws or something to grab. We're going to need eyes so that we can see where we're going, so we don't bump, unless you're a horseshoe crab, so you don't bump into things. But to say that one must have come from the other and come from the other because you see similarities, we see no example of that happening anywhere in the world today. Just like, yeah, you got all kinds of different vehicles driving the roads because they share the same environment. And then, final point would be the dating dilemma. Now I save the best for last. The whole house of cards of evolution is held up by a belief that the things that you see, that the life around developed over millions and millions of years. Now, firstly, it is impossible to prove that scientifically. The best way to prove that is if you had a time machine, someone could live in the future, they could observe conditions in the future, they could have an accurate time machine, set the date, go back, and observe what it was like a long time ago. There is nobody alive, or ever has been, that can go back a million years and tell you what things look like, other than Jesus. So it's impossible to prove that the dating methods that they're using are accurate. And as you read the literature, it becomes very clear that there's a lot of problems in the dating. Let me read something. Carbon-14 is produced in the Earth's atmosphere. I'm reading from an encyclopedia. When nitrogen-14 or N-14 interacts with cosmic rays, scientists believe, notice that, that cosmic rays have been bombarding the atmosphere ever since the Earth was formed, while the amount of nitrogen in the atmosphere has remained constant. They're believing it has been the same. But listen to this. Scientists are not certain that this ratio has been constant. Errors in radiocarbon dating can be caused by inaccurate radiation or particle counts, contamination of a sample with more modern carbon, and stray radiation striking the counter, or other things. This is Compton's encyclopedia when you look at how they're dating. If you walk in a room, I'm going to tell you, all right, you walk in this room here, you open the door, you walk in the room, there's going to be a candle burning on a bar stool, wax candle. I want you to tell me how long that candle has been burning. So you walk in the room and you think, all right, well, I'll take my stopwatch and I'll measure and see how quickly it burns. But then you got another problem. You don't know how tall the candle was when it started. You got to know that. And let's suppose you could take a wild guess at that. Then you got another problem. You don't know if the candle was burning the same speed before you opened the door and let the air in that changed its burn rate. We are guessing at the age of the Earth based on several assumptions. We're guessing on the age of the Earth based on believing that everything now is like it was back then. Let me give you something to think about. So when God made Adam, did he have a belly button? That's really not my question. I just threw that in there. So when God made Adam, did he have to learn how to walk and talk, or did he make him from the factory with pre-installed hardware, software, where he knew how to talk? Was Adam made a baby, or was he made a full-grown man? He was made with a certain amount of age built in. Are you with me? Would you agree with that? So the first trees that God made, massive trees, did they have tree rings? Tree rings are caused by, you know, growth. They're growth rings, but they also are used to help transport the moisture from the roots to the leaves. And so why would God not have rings in the original trees that he made? So he makes him, so if a dendrochronologist, people who study tree rings, if he goes and cuts down a tree that was made by God, he would have the appearance of age in the tree. Even though the tree might be 1 hour old, it might look like it was 6,000 years old. You see what I'm saying? And to me, that's something else I think is very interesting, is that as you go around the world and you look, we see that there's this problem in history where it's just amazing to me how man suddenly appeared 5,000 years ago. He goes from dragging his knuckles to all of a sudden building pyramids. And I think I said before, I've been to the Great Pyramids. I've been to different parts of the world where they have incredible ancient structures. They don't even know how they moved the stones. Dr. Schweitzer did some experiments. They found a Tyrannosaurus rex, supposed to be 60 million years old, thigh bone. They sawed off some pieces of it, and these are evolutionists that did the study. They found that there was soft tissue inside the bones, this very massive bone of a Tyrannosaurus rex, supposed to be 60 million years old. They had added some chemicals to the sample, and all of a sudden it became soft again. They could even see blood cells. I don't know how you'd see anything after a million years, let alone see, you know how long a million years is? 60 million years, still soft tissue? Yeah, that stuff doesn't always make the headlines. You can look it up. You can see these are the actual pictures that they had. They published a study on it. They were mystified by this anomaly. Maybe things aren't as old as we thought. And you know, for me, and I wonder how I can say this appropriately in church, but sex. I said it. I always got everyone's attention too when you do that. If the original single simple cells of life reproduce by splitting, and then those split, and there's still cell replication that happens that way, why would it become necessary for species to have two separate genders? How did that happen? Can you picture the day where cells, they wanted to, you know, start a family, and the cell would just split? You got two. And then all of a sudden, this cell says, I'm going to try something different. I'm going to bring you flowers, and you're going to give me a neck rub. And now we're going to, instead of just splitting, you can't reproduce without me. There is no scenario in evolution that explains that. That there needs to be the cooperation of, I mean, they talk about the genetic advantages of, you know, mixing genes for stronger offspring, but they can't explain why that would be practical. And yet God made man in his image, that through an act of love and cooperation, that two become one flesh. And in their offspring, that child has the DNA and the genes of the two parents. Their living testimony that it's so beauty, and all of that is lost through these things. So, friends, I believe the evidence is clear. You know, one other thing that I saw just a couple weeks ago, talking still about the dating dilemma, the woolly mastodons. They originally believed they all died out 10,000 years ago. You can look this up. I just saw a study in December. They said we were 50% off. They believe now that they have evidence from samples taken in the Yukon that they were alive 5,000 years ago, contemporaneous with man. And all they have to do is publish a new paper and say, you know, I guess we were wrong. They'll publish papers about everything except admitting that in the beginning, God made the heaven and the earth. All through the Bible, it gives us those verses that God is the one who created. If we do not believe that, we cannot believe in Jesus. The Bible tells us to worship him that made. Another thing to consider. Right now, a lot of people in the world are worried that man is going to self-destruct. Humanity is going to destroy the planet. And they just had a big conference in Glasgow about how we can try and rescue the planet. But there's about 7.8 billion people in the world today, and population is still exploding. We've been to China, we've been to India, and it's amazing how many people are in the world. When you look at the rapid growth of population in the world, and I think I've got a chart of that, Karen, if you advance here a little bit. Yeah, there we go. You got the population problem. In just, if you go back 500 years BC, and go to the next slide, Look at how the population of humans has just exploded from less than a billion to 7 billion. It took 5,000 years to get the first billion people in the world. Then it only took 30 years to get the second billion. It took about 15 years to get the third billion. I was alive when there were 3 billion, and now there's 7.9 billion. Oh, if it says million, that's a mistake. Sorry, it's supposed to be billion. Those are billions of people. And so if you go backwards, if you extrapolate backwards, look at how quickly man has proliferated on the planet during that time. You can't have man on the planet for 1 million years. We'd be spilling and falling off into space. You see what I'm saying? The Bible is very clear. God creates. And we can't believe that salvation is a result of evolution. Some people believe in salvation by works. That's kind of like evolution. I'm going to work my way to God, little by little. But salvation believes in a God that can create instantly through His Word. The Bible tells us that God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And as a result of that, that's Genesis 1, verse 3, light happened. God spoke, the Bible says, and it was done. Now, do you believe that you've got to evolve your way into being a Christian? Or do you believe that through faith in His Word, a miracle of creation can take place and you can become a new creature? This is the point that I have been driving through the whole message, is that it is crucial for us to understand that He made miraculously, instantaneously by His Word, or you will not believe He can do that in your life, in your heart. God can, through His Word, transform you instantly. Now, there may be growth and sanctification, but the new heart and the new birth can happen immediately. Like that thief on the cross who is hanging next to Jesus. And he said, "Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus said, "Verily I am saying to you today, you will be with me in paradise." That man experienced a miracle of new creation. He, by faith, accepted the word of the Lord, and a new creation took place. Even hanging there on the cross, he got a new heart. And God can still do that today. Through the power of His Word, He can miraculously transform you. Now, friends, I realize we're living in a world that is struggling with this truth. Look at Hebrews chapter 1, verse 11. It tells us, "And you, Lord, in the beginning laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands." First angel's message, worship Him that made the heavens and the earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. If you understand that He is the creator of all things and that He made you in His own image, You don't have to believe in that it took millions of years for all these things to happen. "Oh, but Pastor Doug, we know the speed of light, and it's taking so long for the light of those stars to reach the earth. How could He have created these stars or these things 6,000 or a few thousand years ago?" What did I say? Can God create things with a certain amount of age built in? When God makes a star, can God make a star with the light already en route for you to see at the same time? Sure He can. So many problems that evolutionists are having with the Scripture is doubting the power of God. Friends, there's a lot of mysteries we don't understand, I'll admit. But as soon as you begin to doubt the power of God and the truth of His Word, life begins to lose its meaning. You are divinely made in His image, and He has a special plan for your life. God wants you to be recreated. I believe there are some who are watching, some who are listening, and your whole worldview has been sent off track because you've been listening to those voices that say we've slowly evolved from primeval ooze and from lower forms of life, and a lot of people are acting like animals because they're being told all their lives that they are nothing more than animals. But you are made in the image of God. And He is offering you His Holy Spirit to guide you. We are noble, dignified, miraculous creatures. David said, "We are fearfully and wonderfully made." And unless we understand and believe that, your whole worldview is going to be tainted. So I would appeal to you, friends, to believe that first angel's message and worship him today. Can you say amen?